Right. What does this say? No relevant financial. No, not me. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Now I've gone. Oh. Well, first of all, thank you to the organisers, Public Health and the Royal Society, for inviting me along. As you see, rather than change the title I was given, I've extended to completely change it. So I'm going to give you a sort of death by PowerPoint, really. And if I can figure out how you can move to the next slide, what we'll be talking about is introducing an ecological public health perspective. So I was just talking to someone in the audience, and they were saying, everybody's talking about obesity. And it's very difficult to get people to an international session. So what I thought I'd do is talk about obesity in an international context. That will pull you over here. That's a joke, all right? British sense of humor. So here we are. But what I'm doing is, as you know, Michael Marmot spoke yesterday, and there's the Commission on Social Determinants of Health, which recently reported. I expect everyone here will have read it, and I'll be asking questions to make sure that you have. It argues that the broader perspective beyond the biomedical and how the world should embrace these issues, much broader, more complex understanding of health than we may have operated with in the past. And I'll be looking at DR. What does that mean? Diet-related diseases, and climate change as well. So we're packing a lot into 20 minutes, and to make the case for ecological public health, or you may be familiar here with part of that perspective called the social ecological model, which I've heard being used, but actually to sort of broaden it and try to give it a bit more flesh on the bones. So, what's the problem? I think, and it may be this is a backstory to the Commission on Social Determinants, that we're still stuck to a degree with an old-fashioned model of public health, at least for the general public. Ask the public what they understand by public health, and actually you'll get the most bizarre answers. And that's a problem for us, because we have to deal with in the world in which people's perspective influence what we can do. And the vision of the 19th century is still perhaps the dominant one in people's minds. You know, we're dealing with certain types of diseases, infectious diseases, communicable diseases, and certain types of interventions, like the sanitary interventions. I can't spell Ottawa. Anyway, the new public health tried to get off the ground, and it has to a degree in changing our belief systems, but we've never seen any society yet grappling with that. So my starting point is that public health is in some trouble. Resources, policy leverage, ideas, and public appeal. Now, let me just give you a slightly British take on that, although I think the reason for talking about our history and US history a bit is because the UK was a laboratory for public health. I see there's a group at the conference called the Spirit of 1848. Well, 1848 was the world's first modern period public health legislation. And so the model that we developed in a period of rapid urbanization, diseases were linked to that urbanization, sort of became a model for elsewhere. At least our problems and how we dealt with them became a model, although there's major differences even right across Europe before you even get outside Europe. So public health is in trouble, long list, lacking political leverage, a communality of risk. The problem is talking about health inequalities, it's the other people. And we need to be able to weigh a way of talking about inequality which doesn't turn people off, which actually talks more about a communality of risk between all of us. It's one of the big disadvantages we have. We have a language called nanny state in Britain. That is, if you do too much for people, it's taking us beyond people's safety and individual solutions. We have big successes, and you have the big successes here of dealing with smoking. I was at a public health conference on obesity 7-8 days ago in Greece. And it was interesting that at the end of the session, half of the people from the conference went out and lit up their cigarette. So, you know, in some places you have a real struggle to get really basic things that we think are the essentials of public health in terms of changing the mood of the society. So, HIV was a global disaster in the mid-80s. It still is, even bigger than then. Diet-related diseases are becoming so, a lot of people talking about obesity, but climate change is potentially the biggest risk of them all. affecting everyone, planetary-wide, and we're avoiding it. We actually talk about it, but it's almost as if it's the environment out there. Actually, the environment isn't out there, it is us. That nature is our nature. So when we destroy that, we destroy ourselves, and we haven't got that image and that picture yet. So what do we mean by public health? Well, this is a speech by a fellow called Tony Blair, who, yesterday's news perhaps, and he was saying our public health problems today are not strictly speaking public health questions at all. What he's saying is that public health was about those things which you don't make decisions over, which are external to us, the environment, the sanitary issues, urbanisation, where we had little choice over. But these are questions of our individual decision. So we're in this choice era. Well, I think that's a very simple view. I don't know what Bush's view on public health is. Well, you know about these things. I'm entirely ignorant. So let's move on. So Blair's view of the classical model was it focused on a broken environment, mostly unrelated belief or behaviour. And actually, if you're looking back in a lot of British literature, and American for that matter, you have the supermen and superwomen who came in and solved things. The Bazalgettes, the Chadwick. That's Edwin Chadwick, not Henry Chadwick, who was the British guy who wrote the rules of baseball, by the way. Don't you forget that. And the heroes here, if you go to the Department of Health in Worth Street in New York, they're written around the building, Herman Biggs and people. Now, these are my heroes too, but that's a deficient model of history. And what you have is that this success was dependent on a whole set of things, from managing private living spaces, diffusion of new habits, new commercial hygiene products, immunisation trials. It's a much bigger picture than just sanitary reform. It's actually changing the society. And that's ultimately the argument I'll be making. And actually, it's underpinned. The big changes in health and in longevity over the 20th century were depending upon rising living standards, improved nutrition, housing, political economic rights, made major differences. And the political elites themselves having an argument that it's in the interests of them, the people who run the society, to use the state to invest in infrastructure, the social reproduction policies, basic child welfare. That was the discussion that went upon the people who have much more control in running the society than people working in public health. And you need to, in every society, needs to win that argument. It's not just an instant thing that society gets better. It actually is a fight in every society. So, but there are problems with this, and I'll run them very quickly. You may have, Charles Webster is the official historian of the NHS, and much of what went by public health in the 20th century was actually rather class-based, was rather moribund, and this is not a particularly flattering picture. This changed by the 60s and 70s. Public health as a medical one side of it became, after low periods, became much more dynamic, much more accepting of an interdisciplinary perspective, and more outward and more progressive. But in the US, if you read Laurie Garrett's book, again, the same sort of issues being raised. So what you had was a tradition of public health, which was frankly, we celebrate it now, but there were very strong reactionary elements to it. So we have to move on, though. And we have to look at the world as it is and the world that's becoming. And our resources are running out. The Malthusian risks, Malthus's view that, we wouldn't have enough food to feed people and you'd have massive cull of the population, may be occurring into the future. And rebuilding trust, which is the story of Laurie Garrett's book, just doesn't do it. It's not just about giving faith to people in white coats to save us. Actually, society coming to a common public health vision, which may be the way we have to win things. So we're moving to a different period. We can't just have Rostow, one of your great heroes of the 1950s and 60s, who justifies the Vietnam War on the basis of we need to have expanded affluence for the world. But affluence is driving us into penury. So, public health, in my argument, needs to be rethought. And what's the basis of it? Well, in Britain, and I think your definitions are pretty much similar to this one. This is the one from Sir Donald Acheson. This was a reformulation of it by Derek Wanless, who was, I suppose, one of our modern public health heroes. Isn't that right, David?
And a banker.
And a banker. actually, a former banker, to be honest. He was the man who sat on the first bank to go bankrupt, and he was charged with assessing risk. He was better at public health than he was at a banker, I know that. but he gave us the picture of choice being into it. This is the new age, Blairite age. People are choosing to be unwell or well or whatever. But the trouble with these definitions is that the world has changed, and we don't have those levers of the past that they perhaps had in the 19th century, which they had to fight for. The choice argument undermines, underplays the societal determinants. And that's the basis of Michael et al.'s report on social determinants of health. But the material world is also ignored. We know sanitary world, if you like, was the past. Now we're into a period of choosing things. Actually, the material world hasn't gone away. We've merely diluted the problems for a bit, but they are with us. And that nature, which we've taken for granted so long, and we are part of nature, is now coming back into our lives. So the limits of the orthodoxy and the current choice arguments are exposed, and we've seen at this conference, by dietary-related diseases and climate change. Now, if I was giving you a much longer presentation, I'd look at climate change too, but I'm going to go through it very quickly. Well, what's the picture of it in terms of nutrition? This is called the nutrition transition, which is, I guess, the standard WHO view of what's happened, which is in the excellent report, TRS 916, which you haven't read, you should. But it's basically saying this thing is happening worldwide, and every society I've looked at is entering into these same types of problems. And if you look at, this is FAO data, the massive increase in the consumption, supply and consumption of dietary fat. You'll get this from report 916. In Greece and Spain, I was in Greece about 8 days ago, discussing child obesity, which is major for this society, major for Italy. And I just thought, these are places which were celebrated for their Mediterranean diet. Weight gain among children in southern Italy, so that you have in Calabria, over 55% of children of the age of 8 years old, either obese or overweight. These are societies which we thought, if anywhere, could manage these problems because of the quality of their diet. I'll move on, because the way we've been looking at it in the UK is to foresight what the problems are with the future. And I have to say that this person here was one of the sponsors of Foresight. Absolutely brilliant idea to bring it. Multidisciplinary, multiple people involved in thinking what the problem was from a total society perspective. Lots of different disciplines. And I think the sort of problems we're facing now require that perspective. We may not have sufficient disciplines within public health, and we'll have to pull in people from outside to help us. And then form a cross-disciplinary perspective, not multidisciplinary, but bringing new ideas together and making them bounce. So the hub of this, and I'm just giving you a very, you can get this report off the internet, and I recommend it, that the hub is the obesity engine. And I have to go through it very quickly. But it's about energy balance in the center. But look at this. And people in Italy love this presentation because it resembles their national dish. This is with the obesity system. Oh boy, if it's that complicated, what are we going to do? You know, the ubiquity of junk food everywhere. It's not just pulling one handle one side or another handle. It's ubiquitous. The problems are with us and built into the society. And an attempt to make it, these causal linkages and then put it into a system map with thematic clusters. Now, I think this is all very helpful, but what do you do about it? And it doesn't set out the history. But what is very nice is our Secretary of State, quoting from one of the policy papers which were given to it, Foresight, saying that obesity is similar to dealing with climate change. That actually it's accepted by the government, that this is a relevant argument. We should be thinking long term. If you don't deal with it now, you get real problems you won't be able to fix later, and so on. You know, making that analogy, but also the analogy also works at the energy level. You've seen it's an energy imbalance for the individual, but it's an energy imbalance for the society. They work together. The causative the problems which are causing climate change are the same nexus of problems that are happening in terms of energy use and consumption at the individual level. So I just want to rapidly move on. I'm not making a big thing on the climate change issue, I know the time, but actually to make that argument that if we're going to resolve one, it gives us a lever for resolving the other. In fact, bring the two arguments together. This isn't a blame issue, by the way, because the obesogenic influences affect everybody, but some people are less vulnerable to this environment and more vulnerable than others. So, why the addition of the word ecological is useful and where it came from? You may know that it's actually linked with an evolutionary theory of society produced by Darwin. Ernst Haeckel, the inventor of the word, was Darwin's main supporter in Germany, a total enthusiast. And Darwin's thinking about society actually was drawn from Malthus. So we're back to the complete circle, you know, of this Malthusian future we're now thinking about actually came from the basis of ecological thought. And I just won't go through, but I think what's very useful in thinking about human ecology is the very cross-disciplinary origins of these terms, many of them from the US. And the particularly commendable thing was the American Journal of Public Health published an essay by Cartman back in 1967, which actually sets out more or less the position I'm giving today, that what you have is two ecologies, a human ecology on one hand, and a natural ecology on the other. And the issue is of making our thoughts about one work for the other. So let me just go very quickly. You've got the Institute of Medicine here, which is a big proponent of it. But what does it mean? Is it about complexity? If we can't deal with the complexity of the interconnectedness, what do we do? That begs spaghetti map again. So it's about thinking about reducing complexity in order to do something about the world. There's the Institute of Medicine diagram, but actually, that's that is drawn really from a colleague of ours in the UK situation, Margaret Whitehead. Now, I think the problem with ecological thinking, and that's why we've got to get tough with it, let me just take you through this first. This is the Michael Marmot's model, moving from social context, social stratification, differential exposures, then vulnerabilities, onward to average and differential health impact, differential health consequences, and a feedback loop through to globalization and pointing our way to governance to help. Now, I think this is wonderful, and it actually is showing and trying to get to grips with complexity. But the problem for me in these models at the Institute of Medicine is it levels at varying distance from the population. When all influences are immediate, simultaneous, and iterative, they work together. For the Commission on Social Determinants, the starting place is the social context, and the social gradient is the key to understanding health inequalities. Well, actually, and natural ecology is a macro or meso level, but actually, isn't it the foundation for health? The health of our natural world is the basis on which the social world is developed. So I think, I don't want to do a particular critique of the Commission. I think there's much in it that is of value, but I take an argument also that if we're going to have levers, it's not just a moral lever, it's also economic and others. And I think we have to address actually the hard politics of the world of the future. Now, if you want to look at the alternative model produced by Tim Lang and myself, you might want to look at this. I'll advertise for a book that's coming out next year in your bookshops. But it's actually looking at trying to have a simplified perspective of looking at actors, looking at the dimensions of ecology, of trying to knit together social and natural ecology, and making arguments that if we're dealing with obesity, for example, as the topic du jour, we're actually doing with that within a sustainable development strategy, and not just as a single focus on one aspect. Okay, so four dimensions of existence that I would want to talk about is trying to unravel complexity. I want to zip past this, because if you want to see the paper, I can send you it. But trying to form a new definition for public health around an ecological model, not just society doing something, but actually to look at the interactions between the social, the psychological, the economic even, and to frame public health in terms of planetary health as well as human health, trying to actually look at those relationships rather differently. If anybody can find a way of of simplifying this, I'd be very happy to hear it, but that's the one we're working with at the moment. So, what way forward for ecological public health? Well, I think analysis and policy have to be filtered through the perspectives of natural and human ecology. Let's have a public health model of ecology which is both natural and human, and not just have this as a social ecological approach. Let's bring them both together. Let's bring a focus onto the future and not just the evidence of the past. David will be speaking about an evidence-based perspective. Now, I think we need a counter to a drab, rather technocratic, and reverse-facing evidence-based approach. We need to think about a future and maybe work to it. But the argument, as in classical terms, we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater or our history. We actually have to say we actually start off with that basis in success, actually, and rebuild trust, but actually go beyond it. And I think if you look at the Foresight Report, you could say what's nice is about projecting the future and not just thinking about what led us up to here, but where we want to go. And actually building a pathway to desirable futures and not just looking backwards into the future and say, we should have done this, we didn't have enough power, and so on. So it takes us beyond short-termism. Now, you need an ultimate authority to give a logic and wally to what you're saying. That's a British word, sorry. To give power to what you're saying. So there's no better, I think, than the Pope himself. And the Pope says here that alongside the ecology of nature, we have the human and social ecology, and we actually have to have the links between the two. I'll stop there. Thank you very much. I hope I haven't PowerPointed you to death, but I'll pass on to our next speaker. Thank you.
We will hopefully have time for a few questions afterwards, so you can revisit some of these thought-provoking suggestions. Our next speaker is Dr. Fiona Adshead, and she's going to look at the role of government. There is a role for government. Yep.
Okay, well, I'm just going to hopefully do that little bit of magic to load my presentation.